If Washington wants to get right with voters, it has to start listening to them.
Welcome to Beyond the Bubble. I'm Kristen Roberts, Washington editor for the 30 news organizations all around America that together make McClatchy. It's the last week of January and State of the Union Day, and it's the first installment of a new feature on our show that we're going to call Real, Not Real. Every last Tuesday of the month until Election Day 2018, we'll spend our 30 minutes together talking about the biggest lies from the campaign trail. To help, as always, I've got Alex Rorty, national political correspondent for McClatchy. Alex, thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Who are we bringing on the show to help?
So we have the wonderful Aaron Shirachman from PolitiFact, who will help us figure out who is telling the truth and which politicians might be bending the truth just a little bit.
And then we're going to bring back our favorite reporter, Katie Glick, who covers Republican politics, to talk about how a strong economy could ruin Democrats' hopes of a big 2018, whether you believe it or not, Alex.
All right, you ready?
Let's do it.
January 20th, the day the people became the rulers of this nation again.
Our ideals and fundamental values are being attacked. Do we retreat or do we fight? I say we fight.
He heard those voices that were out there that other people weren't hearing, and he just earned a mandate.
It is time for Democrats to grow a backbone and get out there and fight.
The American people would like to try something new. We would like to see the country go in a different direction to change the course for America.
He doesn't take this presidency seriously enough.
So to all Americans, hear these words. You will never be ignored again.
Aaron, thank you so much for joining the show.
I'm happy to be here, and I feel like with this new segment, there's going to be a lot of falsehoods and maybe not so many truths, but you probably already knew that.
That's what we're hoping for,
That's kind of why we asked you to come on the show, my friend.
That's literally why we are bringing you on the show.
So when we were prepping for this show, Aaron, I asked you to think about some of the best doozies from the month of January. So why don't you go straight to the lead? What's the best one?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the most recent. Donald Trump, who was in Davos at the World Economic Forum, gave an interview to Piers Morgan. As a soccer fan, Piers gave Donald Trump an Arsenal jersey, which made me crack up. But when it came to the facts of the matter, Donald Trump talked about climate change. He claimed essentially as part of his kind of climate change denying bona fides that the ice caps are at record levels.
The ice caps were going to melt. They were going to be gone by now. But now they're setting records, okay? They're at a record level.
That's actually completely wrong. And at PolitiFact, as we say, it's pants on fire false. We talked to experts who were kind of puzzled by his claim because, in fact, ice caps are at their smallest levels in over 30 years. So the president here has this one completely backwards and completely wrong. And as anyone who's fact checker would also tell you, it's important to remember, weather is not climate. So if it's cold in Washington and New York today, doesn't mean that the climate isn't changing. So a pants on fire for Donald Trump here. I think it's the 73rd at PolitiFact, which is a record at PolitiFact for the most pants on fires for a single politician.
So the thing that's really interesting to me about Donald Trump and climate change is that before he was the president and before he was a candidate, the Trump Organization actually made some business decisions based on a belief that climate change was real. So, for example, Ben Schreckinger found some documents from the Trump Organization where they were applying for permission in foreign countries to build big retainer walls to protect their properties from the effects of climate change. So the idea that he now, as president, is backing away from that belief system is always something that makes me smile.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, if you think about it, what you're seeing actually in China is they're making huge investments in green technologies or technologies that essentially to be better for the environment because China sees a big opportunity for that from a business standpoint. From the government standpoint, I could also see at least how Donald Trump is presenting himself as saying essentially that investment is going to cost money. It's going to require regulation and rules, which are all things that he's against. He wants the economy to roar as freely as possible. And so I could see how he changed hats when he went from the private sector, a businessman who wants to make money, to a leader of a government where he's essentially trying to protect America's interests. Long term, you can question the policy, but in the short term, you can at least see what he's thinking.
All right, Aaron, let's get to your second, I don't know, falsehood or untruth of January.
Yeah, this one's an easy one. It's from Ted Cruz, senator from Texas. During the shutdown, the 3-day shutdown in Washington, he gave a peculiar interview with Casey Hunt at MSNBC in which he tried to deny opposing shutdowns in the past.
I have consistently opposed shutdowns. In 2013, I said we shouldn't shut the government down. Indeed, I went to the Senate floor repeatedly asking unanimous consent to reopen the government.
Sir, you stood in the way of that.
I think that kind of threw the Casey and the others in the press corps kind of doing the interview because they remembered that Ted Cruz, in fact, was the one generally credited with leading the shutdown of 2013. Cruz tried to continue to say, nope, wasn't me. I had nothing to do with this. And he actually he gave a very specific kind of a wonky explanation in saying that only one thing causes a shutdown, and that's when senators vote to deny cloture on a funding bill. Now, you can remember Cruz doing the filibuster on the Senate floor.
Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam.
But you probably don't remember, but he did as well. He voted to deny cloture on a funding bill. So by his own metric, he voted for a government shutdown. So saying he consistently opposed it is completely wrong, and it's a pants on fire at PolitiFact.
So the fun thing about this Ted Cruz thing is, you know, I know there are a lot of reporters on the Hill who are really young and weren't here for that, but a lot of us were here for that. And even back then, Alex, he said, I'm not the one doing this, and he was as wrong then as he remains today.
Yeah, it's funny to me because, I mean, at the time, it was almost like, you know, he should take credit. He's trying to, at that point, ingratiate himself with a lot of the hardline conservatives ahead of his even then inevitable presidential campaign. It really caused a lot of whiplash then, and it caused a lot of whiplash now. I know when he said that, there was a pretty animated discussion on Twitter among a lot of political reporters who couldn't quite figure out why he would even try to claim something like that.
All right, Aaron, let's get to number three.
Yeah, the third one. Oprah is probably not running for president. She says she's not, but, you know, that doesn't mean she's not. But she was in the headlines, obviously, for her speech at the beginning of January, and that led many on the right and kind of in a conspiratorial side to make several claims about Oprah. And one of the ones they resurrected was saying that she, quote, told a Fox News host that all white people have to die.
I said this, you know, for apartheid South Africa. I said this for my own, you know, community in the South. There are still generations of people, older people, who were born and bred and marinated in it, in that prejudice and racism, and they just have to die.
This is actually a post that we saw a lot on social media, getting shared widely on multiple news sites. What we found is that it's a complete mistelling of actually an interview Oprah gave in 2013 when she was in the movie The Butler. It wasn't to Fox News, it was to BBC. And basically what she was suggesting and saying is that in parts of the world, South Africa, one, the U.S. South, others, people grew up in a system that is different culturally than it is today. And so to completely make the change, and we need to kind of have generations move on. So we need to grow. And her comments are just much more, what I would say, is middle of the road than these stories made them out to be. PolitiFact rated this claim false. Actually, conservative fact checkers at the Weekly Standard also found this claim to be false. So essentially, people take twisting the words of Oprah from a 2013 interview, bringing it back to the spotlight because of her comments and the suggestion that she might run for president.
But Aaron, you and I have talked about the fake news of 2016, and you can absolutely see how this becomes something that just catches fire if she does decide to run.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at her comments, and you look at the fury that they could generate, and you have people stretching and distorting and twisting the truth. And as we also know, even as fact checkers, we try to counter misinformation with the true information, but we're not yet at a point where our information travels fast and far enough to kind of combat all that misinformation. And so certainly this is the playbook of 2016 that we're seeing again already. I assume we'll see it through the 2018 elections. And then obviously I think it's going to be omnipresent in 2020. So I think we have huge issues to worry about when it comes to this spread of misleading, deliberate fake news. And so we need some technical solutions. We need more fact checkers. We need a lot of more people working on this problem. But this is one perfect example of how something that she said in 2013 got twisted, distorted in an attempt to malign her character and kind of ruin her reputation.
Aaron, I just want to reiterate, Oprah doesn't want a couple billion people to die. That's not what she said.
She does not. She does not want all white people to die. That is completely a misreading of her quote, which was much more nuanced.
Okay, good to know.
Listen, my main takeaway from that one was that I need to use the word omnipresent more. I think that's a great word, Aaron. All right, Aaron, give me another one.
All right, we've got Donald Trump here attacking or picking on one of his favorite villains, Mexico. So in a tweet, which at PolitiFact we kind of monitor very closely, we have too many people with iPhone watches who get alerts when the president tweets. His tweet here is Mexico is now rated the number one most dangerous country in the world. This kind of speaks to a couple of things. One, the president's use of Mexico as a villain, and two, his efforts to try to always make things the most, the top, his kind of exaggeration. In this case, it is the number one most dangerous country in the world for journalists, but is not true for the risk to the broader public, which is not mentioned or clarified in Trump's Twitter feed. Experts we talked to said homicide measures as one of the best measure of security in the country, and Mexico ranked 10th in the United Nations homicides measure, and that the homicide count actually peaked last year and has started to subside. So obviously, there are concerns in Mexico, certainly for journalists, but that doesn't make what Trump tweeted correct. And so we ended up rating this one mostly false. So we gave him a sliver of truth, but a lot of context missing or statements misleading. So that's our definition of mostly false.
Aaron, so do you just have like a squadron of people who are up at 7 a.m. ready to start fact-checking the president's tweets?
I wish we had a squadron. PolitiFact remains relatively small. There's 10 of us total. So we kind of more have a surgical strike team. How about that? We have a couple of folks who are monitoring the president's Twitter constantly. You know, this is not different for us. We've been in business for 10 years. The person we fact-check more than any other is Barack Obama. So we always put a high priority on claims made by the president, continue to do that here with Donald Trump. The difference, of course, is Donald Trump speaks directly to his supporters and voters through Twitter. So that's new for us. But holding the president accountable certainly isn't. It's an important job. It's a lot of fun sometimes. And sometimes when the president makes claims like these, it leaves us scratching our heads a little bit.
So let's lift up just for a second before we move on to the next segment, Aaron. Can you help us understand how PolitiFact is going to go after the falsehoods in the 2018 cycle? Will you remain primarily focused on the president, or will you start to look at some of these big races and the candidates in those?
Yeah, we're going to do both as much as we can. We have actually kind of created a list of Senate seats that we're particularly interested in. A couple off the top of my head, of course, we're going to be very interested in what happens in Florida, the race potentially between Bill Nelson and the Republican Governor Rick Scott. We're going to be very interested in what's happening in West Virginia. First, you have a very interesting Republican primary, and then whoever succeeds there goes on against Senator Manchin in Ohio. We're going to be very interested to see the race, who Republicans put up against Sherrod Brown. We're going to be looking in Nevada and Arizona. We have about 13 races. Our reporters are all assigned a handful of them, and we're going to try to get to as many races as possible. But, of course, we have to also keep focused on the president. Not only are we fact-checking him, but we're tracking more than 100 of his campaign promises. So we're seeing how they play out. We're in Missouri with Claire McCaskill's race as well. So there's a lot. If I can implore anyone to go to politifact.com/membership, or you can donate $100 and help us hire more fact checkers. I think we're going to need them in 2018 because we have a lot of ground to cover and a lot of ground we want to cover.
Can we establish like a red line, one on my desk and one on your desk, so I can call you and say, quick, we need to know real, not real on this?
Yeah, of course. We'd love to do that. I think there's a lot of times when people have a real simple basic questions. They need the facts, or whether it's fact or false. And I think that at PolitiFact, that's all about what we're providing. Our first idea is, if you wonder if it's true, that's something that we should be fact-checking. So let's get those phone lines installed, and then we can stay in constant contact.
Awesome. Cool segment, Aaron. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron.
You got it.
Alex, that was really cool. I'm glad that we're doing that segment once a month.
Well, we talk a lot about politics, right? It's nice to actually dive into the substance, too, and really kind of sort out what is true and what isn't true.
And so along that vein, let's bring in somebody who can help us sort out with some real reporting the truth or the falsehood, fallacy behind Democratic enthusiasm about 2018. And by someone, I mean Katie Glick. Welcome back to our show, Katie.
Hi, so great to be with you.
Now, you just landed at DCA from where?
Yes, I literally just landed at DCA from Palm Springs. It was a very long overnight journey.
What a hard
journey.
Life you have. My God.
Are you heading to New York after this,
Katie?
You
say Palm Springs and it sounds glamorous, but what's less glamorous is like the 3:55 a.m. flight from Phoenix that you do have to take.
I agree.
So, you know, it does end up balancing
out.
I
agree. I never want to fly through Phoenix.
Oh, my goodness. Especially not at that hour.
Okay, so you are coming to us from the Koch Brothers gathering where they talk about policy issues. What did you learn?
At this gathering, there was certainly a discussion of policy issues, but what was forefront in a lot of people's minds was the midterms. There is a lot of concern among conservative donors, conservative activists, because they think that the left is unbelievably energized, and that is the one thing that they cannot plan for. You know, they can't help how many Democratic activists end up turning out. They've taken note of how many people have turned out at even the sort of the most off the radar local elections. In state after state, Pennsylvania to Wisconsin, they are really worried about an energized progressive base. The only thing that they think may help shield them from the wave that Democrats keep talking about is a very strong economy.
Bam. That's it right there. So, Alex, you and I are constantly having this argument because you sit too close to my office about the strength of the Democratic position here walking into 2018. And I will give it to you that they ended 2017 very well.
With a bang.
But Democrats are severely underestimating the power that this economy is going to have on the Republican argument that Americans' lives are better today than they were 2 years ago.
But is the economy in a much stronger position than it has been in the last 4 years?
The economy is definitely in a position that feels stronger to a lot of Americans. The job market is better. The tax reform package is totally sellable on the stump. And when people file their taxes in a couple months, some of them are doing it already, they are going to feel the impact. And let's not forget that there are companies that are giving people bonuses just based on the fact that the tax reform package was passed. All this stuff adds up to a individual feeling like things aren't as bad as I thought maybe they would be.
You know, granted, there have been a lot of press releases from companies saying that they're giving these bonuses, but I think that's a phenomenon inside the bubble. I think that's something that gets talked about a lot
on
Twitter.
I'm sorry, did you get a bonus? You didn't.
I did not get a bonus, although I would certainly welcome one. I think that this
I'm
is something
noted.
I think there has been, I think my bonus is going to be determined on the merits of this answer, the forthcoming. But look, I think there has been a lot of discussion among Republicans that, yes, there has been some benefit to this tax bill that the Democrats, who literally in Nancy Pelosi's case called it Armageddon, were way overblown. And they're right. Right. Like there is going to be some benefit to this massive tax bill. But if you look at the polling, it is very clear. It is still unpopular.
It is still unpopular, but it is growing in popularity. And Republicans will say, and this is something I heard all weekend, that Democrats are incredibly out of touch when they dismiss the bonuses that some people are getting as crumbs, as we have seen Democratic lawmakers suggest. And it was suggested to me that we are going to be hearing that language used in ads going forward. You know, Republicans make the point that to the people who are receiving bonuses, to the people who are seeing bigger take-home pay, which is something that actually is expected to happen for a lot of folks within the next couple of weeks, I believe. That's very significant to a lot of everyday
Americans.
And
we haven't even mentioned the stock market or the housing market, which are both climbing and climbing and climbing.
Well, look, you know, Congressional Leadership Fund, I think it was just last week, actually put out a warning to all of its members to not get too excited about the politics of tax reform, because in their own polling, in their own surveys, it's still unpopular. You know, look, it is not, I would grant you, it is not this huge albatross that maybe Democrats were hoping for when the legislation passed. It has gained more popularity. A lot of the news has been positive. But this is still ultimately a net negative for the GOP, in particular when you combine
it. Wait, what's the net negative?
The tax bill? The passage of it, sure.
When you look at the poll numbers, it's true that it's not
popular. Are those national polls? They are.
That's true.
Those are national
polls. And it depends on the
district. And we're talking about congressional races, right? And I think the Democrats have been making a lot of decisions and making a lot of predictions based on what they're seeing in the national polling and a general anti-Trump feeling. Now, you know, you just got back from California, but I just got back from spending a week in Tennessee. And I will tell you, there are plenty of conservatives and Republican voters who are unhappy with Donald Trump, mm-hmm. but they do not like Democrats. And I think there's a distinction there with a difference.
I think that's absolutely right. And I mean, frankly, that is how a lot of Republicans were able to survive last cycle in districts that Hillary Clinton won. You know, we talk a lot about these, 23 districts where you saw Hillary Clinton win, but a Republican member of Congress survive. And clearly, at that time, voters were able to make a distinction between the top of the ticket and, you know, their member. So what I did hear in California was from a number of donors. And by the way, the Koch seminar tied to, of course, the very deep-pocketed Koch brothers. This is not like super ultra-Trump territory. They have really clashed with the president in the past. They continue to have policy differences with him on immigration, on trade. But I will tell you that I spoke with some donors who said, you know, I'm really bothered by his behavior. But at the same time, I do agree with what he's doing on economic policy. The thing that really worries them, though, and this is something that worries a lot of national Republican strategists as well, is that there is a lot of good economic news that they can talk about, but it is very challenging to keep the message on good economic news when we have the president's Twitter account, when we have, you know, every day a different controversy.
That's a totally fair point.
Him.
Now, you are going from one thing to another. What's happening with the RNC?
And that is going to be ultra-Trump territory, so very different section of the party. But so I'm now back in Washington. Of course, we all are. And the RNC, the Republican National Committee National Winter Meeting, is arriving here this week. And of course, the RNC is made up of sort of the top elected party officials from each state who are very representative of the activists in their state. And activists, Republican activists in most of these states, very supportive of the president.
All right, we'll come up with some good stories, and let's move to my favorite part of the show, the lightning round, where each one of you gets to identify one politician making moves relevant to the 2018 campaign. And Aaron, you're up.
So mine's out of the box. It's Nancy Pelosi. I think that you're going to see a lot of spending in Republican congressional districts targeting Nancy Pelosi to try to preserve the Republican majority in the House when she makes comments saying that the bonuses that folks have gotten were crumbs. That's kind of the fire that Republicans use to try to keep the House in Republican hands. So Nancy Pelosi, you'll be seeing a lot more of her in this year.
If I could add, she was actually just featured in an ad release this week by the National Republican Congressional Committee, tying her to the Democratic candidate in Pennsylvania 18, the special election there. So to Aaron's point, it's already happening.
All right, Alex, you're up.
My politician is Jay Hollings. He's running in Texas 23, which is a border district that stretches practically from San Antonio to El Paso. It's a top Democratic target in November. But first, they have to make sure that their candidate, in this case, Jay Hollings, is able to get through. He faces a very competitive primary. One candidate in particular has received the endorsement of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. This is a real test of whether Democrats are going to be able to get the kind of candidates that they need to be able to maximize their gains in November.
Katie.
I'm going to say Rick Saccone, the Republican running in the special congressional election in Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district. There is a lot of money coming in for him, especially kicking off this week, as Alex and I reported first. A plug for that on Friday, but the National Republican Congressional Committee has gone up with quite a bit of money on the airwaves for him, and we're going to see whether that's enough to help him hang on in what should be a conservative district, but is certainly one that national Republicans are worried about.
I'm going with Senator Ron Johnson. He is a Republican from Wisconsin. He is also chairing a committee that would be looking at potential changes to the way Congress deals with sexual harassment and sexual assault allegations, but he doesn't think they need to.
Did you see Kathy McMorris Rogers push back on him?
Tell me more.
She was interviewed, of course, a Republican lawmaker who was interviewed on Fox this week, and she pushed back on his suggestion that this was maybe not something Congress needed to look at much, and said that she was going to talk to him and hoped that he would take a look at the House legislation.
CMR for the win.
Yeah, that's sometimes the benefit of making sure you have women in leadership in your party.
Katie, thank you for being here. I love it when you are on the show.
Always so good to be here. I'm going back to find some more coffee now.
And Alex, thank you for coming to work today.
I know, earning that paycheck. Hopefully that bonus too.
Yeah. I'll try to work on that. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us, and I can't wait to talk with you again.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thank you to producer Jordan Marie Smith, and thank you to our listeners. We want to hear from you, so please send your questions and your comments to btb@mcclatchy.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/beyondthebubblepod. Tell us what you're seeing in your battleground state, and we might even ask you to call into the show. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you use. And we want to say thank you to everyone who's left us a review or a rating. Talk to you next week.